The Guardian.
Support for this podcast comes from Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes creating a professional website for your business, personal brand, or portfolio so easy, it's newsworthy. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.
Football Weekly Extra.
Today, Cups, FA, League, Asian, and African. If you don't like Cups, this may not be the podcast for you. Equally, if you have a problem with gross factual inaccuracies and forgetting era-defining managers. For the rest of you, we've a special preview of the fourth round that you'll both enjoy and top insight from all over the world on Cups. It all adds up to an even more knockout edition of Foot Weekly Extra than usual. Some walk by night, some fly by day. Podcasting strangers who just met on the way. The sweet sounds of Kenny G bring us into another edition of Football Weekly Extra. Now, one or two apologies to make to begin with. Monday's show featured a post regarding the recently departed Sir Jack Haywood, in the course of our reaction to which a rather unfortunate analogy was made, for which we apologise and any offence caused. Barry.
Yes. I used the DR word and I shouldn't have. I apologise for that. What I was trying to say was that Sir Jack, who we have acknowledged was a very generous, good man, did have certain old other school views. Yep. And he was proud to call himself a xenophobe, but he certainly was no racist. So I'm sorry I upset people by saying he was.
Right. Okay. Next up, Al Jarreau. Al Jarreau, jazz funk genius behind the colossal 80s zeitgeist-grabbing smashes Moonlighting and Morning. Do you remember that one, Greg?
Yes.
Oh, by the way, hi, everybody. We've got Barry Glendon here, Greg Bukowski, and James Horncastle.
Hey.
Greg, do you remember Morning?
Oh, yeah, very well.
Morning, Mr. Radio. Do you remember the next line? Morning, Little Cheerios.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah, Morning, Little Cheerios. Great. Anyway.
If you, by the way, had said on Monday Al Jarreau had done the Moonlighting soundtrack, that
everybody
cleared
would have known, yeah,
all confusion but instantly.
Exactly. And Lord, I wish I could go back and
there's a lot of Monday we wish we could go back and...
But I conflated his particular genius with the similarly seismic talents of Kenny G.
Oof.
A lot of angry Al Jarreau fans got in touch, actually. Jogontona says Al Jarreau was the only artiste to win a Grammy in three different categories, pop, jazz and R&B. Litchy says, for all you Al Jarreau fans, he's going to be playing Ronnie Scott's on the 1st and 2nd of April. How about that? Al, if you're listening.
If you want a warm-up act.
No, yeah, very interesting. Yeah. Oh, the other thing was ball managers. Ball managers, Barry. I was going to say we dropped the ball, but we dropped the bald, really, on this one, didn't we? We said... John Ashton was asking if there's ever been a great bald manager. We'd just been talking about Arrigo Sacchi, and yet none of us could remember his name. None of us thought to mention Pep Guardiola. Claire posting saying, yeah, thanks a lot for causing my internal battle not to scream, Pep, you idiots, Pep, on the overground this morning. Dave McNamara responding, it wasn't internal, Claire, everyone heard you. Lots of other people were mentioning, well, Sacchi, of course, Alf Ramsey, the fellow with Chile, Roberto Di Matteo, arguably, as well. Although he had Pep, to be fair, a lot of it's shaven. But that's probably enough of all of that.
Spalletti, Cosmi, Cammy.
Well, I did mention Spalletti. Cosmi, the greatest ball managers ever. I'm not sure that Cosmi's going to be there. But anyway, that's enough apologising. What are we going to get wrong today? Well, let's start with the FA Cup fourth round. Massive series of fixtures coming up from Friday to Monday. We haven't had a massive upset in the Cup yet, I think I'm right in saying.
No, the third round was pretty shock-free.
Are we going to get one, do you think, here? Have you picked out a game for us, Barry, that you'd like us to look at?
I have. Well, it occurred to me this morning, looking at the fourth round fixtures, that I can't even remember the last time we even mentioned, let alone spoke about Middlesbrough, who are flying high in the Championship. They're second under Aitor Karanka, formerly of Real Madrid, formerly Jose Mourinho's assistant and good friend of Mauricio Pochettino. And I I don't really fancy an upset in that game. I think if it was being played at the Riverside rather than the Etihad, then I possibly, yeah. But it's second in the Premier League against second in the Championship. Obviously, they both have bigger fish to fry than the FA Cup, focusing on winning the title and trying to get promoted, respectively. But
I'm not sure if you would ask Borough fans if they prefer to get promoted or win the FA Cup. That's, I mean,
I would say they'd probably prefer to get promoted.
All right.
I mean, I think they'll feel the strong side. It's kind of difficult if you don't watch them regularly. It's difficult to know what their strongest side is.
Let's move on then.
Karanka is big into squad rotation. He often makes four or five changes a game. But they got some good players. Patrick Bamford. Adam Clayton, not the U2 bass player of the same name. Ben Gibson, who's the chairman, Steve Gibson's nephew.
Oh, yeah.
He's a good, I think, centre-back, left-back. He's a good prospect, apparently.
Jonathan Woodgate's still there.
Yeah. They've got that Kike up front and Jelle Vossen, who I think... Kike's, the goals seem to have dried up for him after a good start, but Vossen may play on Saturday.
And in goal, Konstantinopoulos, who's... conceded the fewest numbers of goals in the Championship, only 17 in 26 games so far. Borough, as you say, in excellent form. They've only had one defeat in 13 matches. Now, Man City have had one defeat in, well, one, of course. Will they bounce back from that footballing lesson they received from Arsenal? So you're saying if it was at the Riverside, you predict an upset, but not at the Etihad?
No, I think City will probably go through. Borough might get a draw, maybe. But
what about the fact that Man City decided to fly across the world to do a bit of warm weather training in the Middle East, got Lampard injured in a friendly there against Hamburg, and then have flown back again? Will that? Do you think that'll disrupt things, wouldn't you say, Guru?
It's not going to help, is it?
No, there you go. All right. James, what game is grabbing your attention?
I was going to go for Bristol City West Ham on Sunday early afternoon.
Why, James? Why?
Well, because West Ham, for the first time really under Sam Allardyce, I think are taking the competition seriously and honouring that great tradition that they have at the club of winning it. Remember this time last year, they were sort of struggling a little bit with Carroll's injuries and the like. And I think they had a Capital One Cup semi-final as well. So they sent out the kids against Nottingham Forest and got hammered 5-0. But now, you know, they're very comfortable in the league, doing better than many people expected. One of the revelations this season, can kind of afford to actually have a go at this.
What about Bristol City? They're a real revelation, aren't they?
Yeah, joint top of League One. In fact, there are a number of League One Cup teams in the fourth round who are actually doing really well, taking some momentum. I mean, they've won 10 of their last 12 games. And Steve Cotterill's quite a interesting manager insofar that he's just one of those off the wall types, very superstitious. You know, if he sees a magpie on his way to training, he won't park in a training, he'll keep driving until he sees another magpie, and
really
wears lucky underpants and just sort of that sort of thing, which is
he should just salute the magpie.
That's his superstition. Are people in football more?
I've never heard that.
Say hello, Mr. Magpie.
Or other people suggest spitting. Perhaps listeners have their own solutions for when one magpie presents itself. There's so much superstition, though, in football. So much. And it is a slippery slope, as many a superstitious footballer has discovered as they descend into OCD hell.
Yeah.
What were we talking about? Bristol West Ham. Yeah. Well, the Robins. That's West Ham's problem, not Magpies. Robins. All right. What's your prediction then, James?
I think West Ham will win just because they are, as I said, they have got their sights set on this competition. Could maybe...
Do you think?
Maybe do something, yeah. Maybe get to the final again like that famous Liverpool one.
If you're looking for a tasty derby from this fourth round of action and perhaps a game actually played at 3 o'clock on the Saturday afternoon in the face of tradition... Greg, you've got something for us.
Yeah, it's at St Andrews, Birmingham versus West Brom. And I've picked this one out, listener, because I want to give some credit to Gary Rowett.
Oh, yeah.
He's doing a wonderful job at Birmingham since taking over in October. He took over a team that was spiralling towards oblivion. They'd just been spanked 8-0 at home by Eddie Howe's Bournemouth, another young, very good manager in the Championship. And Gary Rowett was possibly a risky choice. He's coming in from Burton. He's known not for being like he's not going to put out any fires. He's going to come in and try to change things over a longer period of time, get him playing nice football. And he did it remarkably quickly. They've lost just twice in the last 13 games. They've got a similar form to what Barry was talking about with Middlesbrough before, and they're looking to get promoted. And he's essentially doing the job for Birmingham that I imagine West Brom fans would like Tony Pulis to do and drag him out of trouble and up the table. And he's got them within sight of the playoffs now. They're about 9 points above the relegation zone, about 10 or 11 points off the playoffs. And
right.
he's doing really well. And he's done it. He's got the best out of... There's a young winger called Demarai Gray who has scored a hat-trick recently against Reading. He's 18 years old, playing for the England under-19s. He's playing really well. He's got them scoring goals from all over the place, not just the strikers. There's David Cotter, Paul Caddis are chipping in, the midfielders, defenders. And I just think they could really be up for this against West Brom. They've come through a very difficult period. They've got loads of confidence now. And it's at St Andrews as well. And, I'm sure it'll be actually feel like a proper cup tie with a really good atmosphere.
Excellent. They of course, narrowly got past Blyth. Well, there was a little bit of confusion. Blyth Spartans gave them a bit of a scare.
And I'd give Gary Rowett a load of credit because they were 2-0 down, went in at half-time. Whatever he said at half-time worked wonders. He came out on a farmer's field of a pitch, and they scored three goals within 15 minutes, and that was it. And then they didn't give Blyth another look in, and I just thought that showed that they've actually got a lot of character as well as the good football he's getting them playing.
They're playing West Brom, who I think have had three straight clean sheets in their first three games under Tony Pulis. Does Pulis do FA Cup? I can't remember.
He's not there to do anything with West Brom in the FA Cup, but I don't think he'll take this lightly, given the fact that it's a local rival and the fans won't want him to take it lightly.
7-0 v Gateshead in the third round for West Brom.
After he came rampaging out down from the stands, didn't he? And started shouting all kinds of obscenities.
Four for Berahino in that game.
Yeah.
Well, this is a top game. Hey, here's my pick. Aston Villa Bournemouth. You'll have to wait till Sunday afternoon for this one. 3 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. Aston Villa have only scored 11 goals all season. Now, they beat Blackpool... struggling Blackpool just 1-0 in the last round. Do you know that's their only goal they've scored this year, Barry? And Nason tweeting in after this weekend's no-goal performance against Liverpool, he says, which took them to 8 hours and 42 minutes without a goal. He said, this isn't even our worst drought of the season. It's true. They've done over 9 hours already this season in a previous run of goalless games. Anyway,
I remember that.
The funny thing is that they are the lowest scorers in the Football League. In fact, I think in the top seven or eight tiers of English football. Bournemouth, I believe, are the highest scorers. They've got 57 league goals so far. Can that be true? Have I made that number up? It's true. I've got confirmation. So I think, and you mentioned Eddie Howe, you back Bournemouth there. It wouldn't even be an upset. I think they might even be the bookies' favourite for that game.
They did lose to Leeds.
They lost at the weekend, yeah.
They did lose to Leeds.
But they're still top of the Championship?
Yeah, by a point, because Ipswich lost... last night, was it?
Leeds, who were fresh from a pre-match tasty meal cooked by Massimo Cellino. He's not just books he can... No, he doesn't cook. he cooks meals. He cooks meals.
Yeah, pasta dish, apparently.
No.
Yeah. Who'd have thought it?
And it was very nice. Good. All right. Now, there's loads
of...
Sorry,
can I just give a little plug? Bolton go to Liverpool on Saturday evening. Mm. And that's the return of... Emil Heskey to Anfield.
Right.
I've done a little video with him, and who I went to see on Monday.
Right.
And I was in his rumpus room.
All right.
What's that?
Well, it's in his house down the basement. He's got his little boys' room, table, football table. He's got turntables, full bar.
Right.
Lots of nice jerseys up on the wall from various players. Two from his old buddy, Michael Owen.
Mm-hmm.
There's video on the website, and there'll be an interview in Big Paper on Saturday.
All right.
Has he got lots of pictures around of all the times he held the ball up extremely well over his career?
No.
Okay.
Who's his strike partner? Idiger Johnson at Bolton, is it?
Occasionally, yes.
Yeah, okay, good. Oh, that's an interesting game. Lots of other matches as well. We don't have time to go through them all, but they are games like Blackburn, Swansea. Brighton, Arsenal. They met last season, finished 3-2 to Arsenal, but of course Chris Hughton now in at Brighton. It's quite a tough game, that. for Arsenal, isn't it? Especially because, you know, when they've just won as well as they did, you kind of half expect them to do an Arsenal and come unstuck. Bradford are playing Chelsea. Well, Chelsea are going to be tired because we'll talk about their League Cup stuff in a second. You've got Preston, Sheffield United, two League One sides, Cardiff, Reading, Sunderland, Fulham. Fulham have just inflicted a heavy defeat on Nottingham Forest. And Saints Palace, which is Alan Pardew going back to, you know, one of the clubs that's previously let him go, sent him on his way.
I'd also point out Derby Chesterfield, because I think this is the first time the Spireites have been in this round of the competition since, what, 97, when they reached the semi-finals.
Wow.
They were robbed that year.
What happened, Barry?
They lost the semi-final against Middlesbrough. They were 2-0 up. I think they had a goal, perfectly good goal disallowed. That would have made them 3-0 up in the FA Cup semi-final. And then Borough came back and beat them. That was the year Super Kevin Davis made his name.
Really?
Mm-hmm. He was playing for Chesterfield.
Was that a ball over the line thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. Wasn't
Hit
it?
The bar, bounced over the line and was disallowed.
And where's he now, Kevin Davis?
He's at Preston.
Preston.
There you go.
Against Sheffield United in the fourth round.
Right.
Another of his old, that's his hometown club.
Excellent. And who are the Spirits playing this weekend?
Derby.
Derby, there you go. Wow.
It's a Derbyshire derby.
All right. Romantic though that is, I'm going to say it's not the pick of the romance ties, because that honour belongs to Cambridge, Man United. Cambridge, of course, the lowest ranked side still in the competition. A little bit of excitement here. Friday night lights at the Abbey Stadium. Money versus money in a real sense, because, yeah. Anyway, we've got a Cambridge fan now on the line. Hello there, Max.
Hi there, Jay. First time caller, long time listener, love the show.
Hang on, that's Max Rushton, isn't it? Barry, you can't keep getting Max into the show.
This is nothing to do with me. I wanted Mark Saggers or the bloke from Groove Armada, but they were unavailable.
Both sound calls. Max, it's so kind of you to do that, but you have to let go, Max. You have to let go.
Well, as far as it's concerned, I'm very much the Brad Jones of the pod to your Simon Mignolet with Dave Farrar, the Peggy Arfax ad. I just want that to be clear.
Okay, you're a flatterer.
Yes.
All right, you're also a top celebrity Hughes fan. So how excited are you about this?
If you Google famous Cambridge United fan, actually nothing comes up, which is relatively devastating.
I find it interesting that you've done that, though.
do you know what? I did it because The Guardian, you know, The Guardian really wanted a famous fan to write a piece for them in the paper tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
And they couldn't find one. And so they asked me. So I Googled famous Cambridge United fans to see if there were any. Ron, Barry's right. It's just the bloke from Book Armada.
Oh, yeah.
So am I excited? Yeah, I'm very excited. I don't like to talk about my charity work, but I was at the homeless shelter and I threw a pasta bake over a confused Ghanaian man when number 30 came out, because I presume number 30 would be rubbish like Rochdale and devastated. And then they said Manchester United. And then I phoned every single person I know at the club and managed to get a ticket.
Oh, you did?
I'm excited about that.
Ah, oh, brilliant. Because I know the fans have been like queuing overnight in sub-zero temperatures to get in to Abbey Stadium. I was going to ask if you're going to be there, but you'll actually be there on Friday.
Yeah, I'm taking my dad.
Oh.
He's 75. So the days of him sort of taking his shirt off in the Newmarket Road end are over. Mm. And so we'll be sitting in the main stand. And I don't know, I've got... Oh, obviously, we'll probably just get humped 4-0, but I just have a funny feeling that we could do something. And it's interesting that I was chatting to, without wanting to name drop, the chief exec, Jez George. He was saying there's just something about Manchester United which is just... It's just a bigger deal than any other club. When you're a lower league fan and the draw comes out, you only want Spurs, Arsenal, Liverpool, Chelsea, Man City, Man United. Basically, if it goes Aston Villa, you're like, no, I'm not good enough. They're on their own. And I hadn't really thought about that.
Mm.
You know, they probably are just bigger than any other club. And also, they're not as good as a couple of the others. So I just think we could get something.
Right. Well, maybe having seen them play MK Dons earlier the season is why he was so excited to get them. How does this rank? Is this the biggest game ever for Cambridge, or am I revealing my ignorance?
In a way, the playoff final at Gateshead, made Football League, was bigger, if you're trying to sound like a sort of sensible football fan. But in real life, I mean, it's the biggest game for years and years and years, yeah. Certainly since probably the quarterfinal in 91 when we went to Arsenal, because we were top of the old third division, I think, then, and they were the champions, and it was a quarterfinal. And so I suppose that makes it pretty big. But yeah, for at least, I don't know, how long is that since 91? That's quite a long time, isn't it?
It is quite a long time.
15 years?
Yeah.
25 years?
I think 25, 24 maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. Barry does the maths on our non-award-winning radio show.
Right.
Yes.
Listen, one final thing. Geraint Holloman asking who you want in the fifth round.
If I want the fit, I'd like Rochdale at home.
Right, okay. Nice. Max Rushton there. Any chance, you think, for Cambridge?
They have a chance.
Very small. It depends what United do. I mean, if they don't play De Gea, what they're going to do? Play Victor Valdez? Play maybe get to see Januzaj, who hasn't played for a while? But, you know, all good enough players to handle Cambridge.
I mentioned the MK Dons game. Does that belong to a different era of Van Gaal's Man United, do you think, Greg?
Yeah, probably. I think they've improved since then. They can score a lot of goals now. I'd give Cambridge, using an equation I've just made up in my head right now, a 7.2% chance of victory.
All right, okay. Well, that was a mighty part one. Let's see what part two can offer.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace, the powerful platform that gives you simple tools to create a gorgeous website in minutes. With elegant templates, Getty image integration, and marketing tools, you can make your ideas resonate with the world. Try it at squarespace.com and use the offer code Guardian to get 10% off.
Football Weekly Extra with James Richardson.
First of all, some League Cup semi-finals. What's the away goals rule in the League Cup semi-finals?
There is no away goals rule.
Is that right, Barry? Or
it counts
or,
after extra time.
Yes. So how does that work?
So in the second leg, instead, it goes into extra time if the scores are all level. You know, it doesn't matter who scores
on aggregate.
More away goals. Yeah, on aggregate. Yeah.
Yeah. So say, for example, Chelsea and Liverpool, who drew 1-1 at Anfield, if they are at 2-2 after 90 minutes, even though normally that would mean that Chelsea would have won because they'd... Liverpool would have won because they'd got two away goals. In this case, they would still go to extra time because they're not counting away goals after 90 minutes. But if after the 120 minutes they were still drawing 2-2, then Chelsea...
No, then Liverpool would
then be the winners. That's clear.
If it's 0-0 after 90 minutes...
Yes.
And then it stays that way.
Yeah, that's a better example. I like that.
Then Chelsea would go through
because they've got an away goal.
Yeah.
But after 90 minutes, it would still go to extra time because at that point, they don't count away goals.
Yes.
Whose clever idea was that? Wow. Is there any other competition that uses such a bizarre means of deciding? No? Okay. All right. Greg, what about Liverpool-Chelsea?
I thought it was a really entertaining game. Thought Liverpool would play really well on the night. I thought Mourinho also did his homework very well beforehand, in that I thought they were going to come and be a bit more expansive than they were. They actually defended really deep and limited the... Like, Liverpool had a lot of possession and there's a lot of attacking, but they thrive when there's space behind the defensive line and the goalkeeper can spring Sterling through that into that space. And they sat really deep, so the balls that they were playing in, Sterling wasn't able to get onto the end of. Mm. Which is why in the end, when he ended up scoring, it came from him coming a little bit deeper, turning and actually running at the defence and scoring what was a wonderful goal as well.
Thrilling run, wasn't it?
It was a really, really, it's a great run. And it just shows that, you know, what a quality player he is. And he's got bundles of skill as well as pace as well.
All right. Is it fair, do you think, to draw a connection between the fact that he had a week off and how electric he looked in that match?
I don't know.
Is it fair then, do you think, to point fingers at Gary Cahill and say the last month or so has seen him looking very shaky indeed?
Yeah, although there was times in that match where I thought he made some really, you know, good interceptions as well.
Right.
And he's played a lot of games for Chelsea this season, so, you know, maybe there's going to be moments when he looks a little bit shaky. But I just thought this was another example of Liverpool looking to, you know, they've improved a lot over the last 4 or 5 weeks. Rodgers is, by playing Sterling through the middle, I think he's basically replaced last season's pace that he lost in Sturridge and Suarez, and that's made things tick a lot better. I think playing three at the back has worked really well. He's played Emre Can there, who's a really good ball player. So there's somebody there who can play the ball out very intelligently from the back. I think he'll end up being a midfielder. And also the new signings have finally started to make an impact. So you've got Can. Lallana has been good over the last few weeks. He probably would have started had he not been injured. Marino has started to look really good as a wing back because he's a fullback who likes to go forward. And then you've also got Malkovic, who's been playing on the other side, who's been improving an awful lot. So I think that's made part of the difference is those players have now started to impact on the team.
All right, and what do you think is going to happen when you go to Stamford Bridge?
Probably it will be 0-0 and it'll go to extra time. All and right. Chelsea will win on away goals. Now, I don't know. I'd like to think Liverpool will go then and be as aggressive going forward as they were at Anfield, but I imagine Chelsea will not play the same way and they have got an awful lot of power going forwards as well.
Looking forward to seeing Diego Costa and Henderson go up against each other.
They're going to do some like mano to mano chest thumping in the middle, aren't they? Mm. I'm guessing.
I'd definitely back Costa in that, wouldn't you? You'd usually think.
Probably because he must be 40 years old and has been there and done it all before and renamed himself or something. You won't want to mess with Costa.
Right.
I think the stats for that Chelsea-Liverpool game were fairly remarkable. I think Liverpool had 17 attempts and goals. Chelsea had one.
I guess Courtois was their best player, wasn't he, for Chelsea?
Fair enough. What about the other League Cup semi-final, which saw Spurs taking a 1-0 lead thanks to their victory at White Hart Lane against Sheffield United? Spurs are going to be facing Leicester. We didn't mention that one in the FA Cup fourth round. This was a narrow win for Spurs. It took that kind of handball and goal from the spot. Will Hughes posting in saying, being that Clough's teams do so well against Premier League sides, is it a wonder that a Premier League team doesn't bring him in? Because they do, don't they?
They do, but I mean, you're talking about cup games or one-off.
All right.
One-off matches. Where
but a lot of one-offs in a row.
Yeah.
Although they lost this one.
Mm. Mm. So do you think they'll lose against Preston because they're in the same division as them in the fourth round of the FA
Cup? Well, that's what John Ashton's been suggesting, yeah. Although they are currently seventh, so, obviously they do win some games in League
I think they actually
League
beat
one.
Preston, yeah. Okay.
Mm. It's interesting just to see what kind of teams that the semi-finalists in the League Cup put out in the FA Cup at the weekend. I mean, Chelsea can afford to take it lightly, Liverpool maybe not so much, and Sheffield United probably not so much either.
Chelsea take it lightly in the sense of...
Well, they've got Bradford at home, so they can rest probably more players than Liverpool will against Bolton, who have improved a lot under Neil Lennon.
Yeah, that's true. All right. How much hope would you give Sheffield United when they get back to Bramall Lane? That would be a tough game for Spurs.
That'd give them a good chance.
Yeah. All right.
I was talking to John Ashdown earlier, and he said he was slightly disappointed by the fact that Clough, who liked to play football, in the second half of that match, he had quite a few free kicks halfway inside Spurs' half. And you're a League One side, you're playing against a Premier League side. So, he's saying put it in the mixer, that's your best chance because that's a leveller. And instead, they play it short and play in front of the Spurs' defence and then struggle to get through. And maybe that's okay in League One, but not against a Premier League team who they face teams who play in front of them all the time and try and play them through them. That's the way they defend best. So. He was a little bit disappointed, wasn't he?
All right. Well, who knows? The second legs are next week, are they?
Yeah.
Middle of next week. Right, there you go. All right. Let's move on then, listener. Let's move on to Africa Cup of Nations. What do we think so far? Have you been across this at all, Barry?
I haven't really. I've been busy. I haven't had a chance to right. see much of it.
You've been missing 10 games so far, 6 draws. Everybody just seems to be drawing 1-1. There's some very full stadiums, one or two bits of trouble outside the stadium of fans trying to get in. Loads of fans who apparently are just locals dressed up by the authorities and then bust into stadiums. But, Algeria were the big winners. Paul Doerr was in last week talking about how Group C was the key group with Algeria, Senegal, Ghana and South Africa. Algeria, one of the big winners, only 4 wins, as I say, in the opening 10 games. They beat South Africa 3-1. Senegal managed to beat Ghana.
Final minute, wasn't it?
Yes, Moussa Sow with that one. Anyway, so all sorts of excitements, not least, as Billy Husky points out, Jovinho and his tantrum after his red card in Ivory Coast game with Guinea. This ended 1-1, but Jovinho sent off and given a 2-game suspension. But extraordinary scenes. Have you seen his reaction, James?
The punch.
Well, he punches, rabbit punch. Yeah, and then is most distressed to get a red card. It was kind of Cassano-esque reaction. He slumps to the ground and begins beating the turf with both fists. In a manner of a small child whose blanket, etc., has been taken away. And this continues, I think, for 2 minutes or so before he eventually deigns to leave the field. Glorious scenes. Glorious.
Just on the subject of the African Cup of Nations, the former Observer sports editor, Brian Oliver, is over there. But he wrote a great article about just... well, he was lamenting the fact that none of the major papers in the UK are covering it, basically, and it's not even on BBC anymore. But the piece, if you can dig it out, has some great anecdotes from African Cup of Nations past.
Guardian's got fairly full coverage, no?
It does, yeah. I mean, I presume Jonathan Wilson's doing stuff for us. Yeah. And
not necessarily for us, but he's certainly out there.
We're doing minute-by-minute reports on as many of the games as we can, most of them, I think, if not all.
And it's on two different English stations. Not the BBC, though, admittedly, anymore. Coppa Italia. Big cup special today in the podcast. Coppa Italia this was the last 16 currently underway. I want to mention this because ordinarily you don't devote a lot of attention to the Coppa Italia on this podcast. Strangely so, Greg, I know. But this did feature a brace for Mario Gomez. Crikey.
Yeah, been without a goal for 54 days.
54 days.
Even longer before that. And had been criticised, certainly in the media, and comments from his coach, Vincenzo Montella, about perhaps he should watch some of his old goals on YouTube to kind of remember how he did them, he scored them.
Accidentally watched that miss against Switzerland.
Oh, perhaps.
Yeah.
Was it against Switzerland or Austria?
Austria or Switzerland.
Or Poland.
Can't remember.
One of those teams.
One of them.
Yeah. But yeah. I know the one you mean.
Yeah, so he hadn't scored in a long time, and two came along at once.
All right, so Fiorentina beat Atalanta, which means they've got a quarter-final tie with Roma, which is exciting, because this Sunday evening, James, we're going to be doing Fiorentina-Roma in Serie A. That'll be ever so good. Roma squeaked past with a very controversial penalty, Empoli. But let's move straight on to Inter.
Sorry, do you think Cuadrado will leave Fiorentina?
Ah, well, there you go. That's an interesting question.
Well, it would surprise me, only because... they've had quite a tumultuous January as it is, in that their goalkeeper, Neto, who's been linked with Liverpool, one of the best in Serie A in the last year, he's basically said, I'm not going to sign a new contract. So they've frozen him out, had to bring in their standing goalkeeper. That's worked out okay-ish. And then all this controversy about Gomez. So then to sell essentially your best player in Cuadrado when you're still in the conversation to qualify perhaps for the Champions League would be a bit strange. But
I'm going to say, if somebody offers you 27 million for Cuadrado, you just bite their hands off.
Well, that's his buyout clause. I still think he's a live wire player. You know, his highs are very high, his lows are a bit low.
What's the most goals he's ever scored?
When I've seen him, his touch can sometimes be wonderful, and at the same time, it can be awful.
Yeah, it's like Gervinho, basically. No?
But I mean, I think one of the reasons why James Rodriguez had such a great World Cup is because it was Cuadrado putting the bullets in the chamber for him. And his buyout clause is for that price, so that's why you'd pay it.
Right.
And the expectation was that he would leave in the summer, and he didn't. So he is due a move either now or in the summer.
Right. I'm not a fan, but...
No.
Yeah. A couple of other things to mention. Inter had the Mancho derby with Sampdoria, Mancini's former club, the club he's probably most associated with. They beat Sampdoria 2-0 to go through to the quarters, and Shaqiri scoring his first goal.
Yeah, and combining with Lucas Podolski, he gave a back-heel assist for it. So that's very much the new Inter. They're through, 2-0 win. Icardi also scored. He's well into double figures. Could be moving in the summer because his contract talks aren't progressing as likely. And if Inter don't make the Champions League, they'd have to sell someone. So I think if Chelsea or, say, Liverpool are looking for a kind of pure finisher, one-touch finisher, he's very good.
All right.
And he also posted one of those selfies this week where his wife, his now wife, Wanda Nara, who he stole off his former teammate, Maxi Lopez, had just had a child, literally just delivered the child, and he decided to take a selfie. It was
in the delivery room, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, in an enlightened kind of 21st century fashion, I'm not sure if you can steal... She came of her own volition. He didn't actually kind of pack her up in the back. As far as I know, but certainly he and Max Icardi were best friends, and
they play this weekend.
Oh, they do, don't they?
Into Torino, yeah.
That's going to be a big one. The big story, though, in Serie A is Milan, who have now axed their coach. It's happened.
Poor old people.
No, 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 Barry, the vehicle they used to get to their games. They've sold their team bus.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But Pippo could well be next on the way because all sorts of angry comments by Berlusconi after they got defeated by Atalanta this weekend. Berlusconi apparently saying, we can't lose to people who earn five times less than us. Anyway, a lot of chaos and confusion at the club. The headline on the Gazette yesterday, what the devil are you doing? But they have sold their bus because they wanted to save some money.
Yeah, times are hard, but at the same time, I think Inter and Juventus have done a similar deal. Yeah. But yeah, didn't stop Milan getting derided on social media.
Oh, indeed.
What they've sold their bus?
Yeah, the team bus.
I'm guessing that would pay two players' wages for a month, wouldn't it?
About 200,000 to 300,000 euros a year is the figure they're supposed. But as James says, other big city clubs have decided, look, we can do this just by getting a travel company to provide us with transport.
Yeah,
so we don't need a dedicated Milan bus. Exactly. Milan, we're in the Deloitte and Touche rankings for the richest, or the clubs with the biggest turnover in the world, which Man United are just behind Real Madrid. Milan and Juve. Juve are in the top 10. Milan are not far out of it. I always find it astonishing. People do explain from time to time how it is that they lose so much money despite having such a massive turnover. But yeah, anyway, all right. Meantime, on the transfer front, one of the big stories of the week, that Sabs, mentioning it here, 16-year-old Martin Ødegaard, who's gone to Real Madrid, earning £80,000 a week. Discuss.
Don't think it's the best decision for him, is it, really, to go to Real Madrid? I mean, are they the best kind of club at developing players? I mean, they develop a lot of players for other teams who end up, you know, can't get into the starting 11 and have to go and play elsewhere.
But maybe he'll go and play with Zidane in their youth team, or in their, just kind of like their...
Well, I mean, they're guaranteed he's going to play for their second team, isn't he?
Is he?
What's the name? What's the name?
Castillo.
Yeah, they've guaranteed he's going to play in the second half
with Zidane,
this season.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, in that team. So, but as you say, is he going to develop particularly well at 16? Couldn't he have come to an agreement and let him carry on playing and enjoying himself where he was? Seems a strange decision, isn't it?
Yeah, not from his point of view.
I think when I was that age, I was earning about £1.35 an hour putting petrol in cars, so I'd say he's probably doing all right.
Yeah. Fair enough, eh? Fair enough. Looking forward to seeing him in action, because to be fair, I've not really seen very much of him. Has anyone seen him in action?
I've seen him do a few tricks.
Yeah, I've seen him on YouTube.
Yeah.
Mm.
He's very good on YouTube.
All right. Excellent. And one other thing, ID long number says, just on weird things in Football Manager, which Ian McIntosh was talking about the other day, in comparison to Kevin Pressman being England manager, I holidayed a Football Manager 12 forward to 2040. And do you know who the England manager was? David Ngoe. All right.
Did he ever turn up that time?
What, in France?
Yeah, do you remember
he
went
did. The player, yeah, I think the player who's gone missing now is Osvaldo, who nobody's seen him for a couple of days.
Danny Osvaldo?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
He's been linked with a move to QPR. What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah. All right, anyway, now that's it for part two. Next up, Asian Cup.
Hello, Football Weekly fans. Producer Ben here with an important public service announcement. The Football Weekly Roadshow will be stopping in central London once more for another of our infamous live shows on Wednesday, February the 11th. So if you want to come and see Jimbo, Barry, Ian McIntosh, Rafa Honigstein and me, head to theguardian.com/membership or follow the links on SoundCloud and the Football Weekly blog. That's Football Weekly live in London, Wednesday, February the 11th, just in time for Valentine's Day. Woof.
Now, Asian Cup. Rather remissly, we haven't actually done too much on this tournament, anything indeed, so far, but it's the quarterfinals now. After great group stages, possibly a world record because they haven't had a single draw in the whole group stage. It's 24 matches, no draws, all sorts of surprises, not least of all China, who had a rotten qualifying, but have been the revelation of the tournament so far. Anyway, quarterfinals busy going on at the moment. Already South Korea have beat Uzbekistan to meet the semifinals. And Thursday, as we record this, China, the aforementioned China, are only playing the hosts, Australia, and it's still going on as we dial up the Guardian's Peter Smith there in Australia. Hi, Peter.
G'day, James.
G'day to you. G'day to you. What's the score, Peter?
Well, we're about 70 minutes in, and it's Australia 2, China 0.
Right. Two goals from Tim Cahill.
That's correct, yeah. Tim Cahill is obviously famous for his heading, but he's pulled out something new by his standards with an overhead kick, albeit from close range, but quite spectacular, and it got Australia on the way after China was threatening to really hold on after they had been digging in the whole match.
Right.
And then Tim added a second soon after.
Okay. It's been a mixed tournament for the Socceroos so far. You got defeated by South Korea. Are they one of the real danger teams, South Korea, in this tournament?
Yeah, it's really interesting with South Korea. Earlier today, they beat Uzbekistan 2-0 in extra time. And you mentioned the lack of draws in the tournament. And almost predictably, after 24 decisive results in the group stage, the very first match in the knockout stage was nil all after 90, and Korea scored twice in extra time. Sun Heung-min scored once in each period of extra time, the Bayer Leverkusen player, and it was looking set to be their fourth 1-0 result in a row until he scored the second in the last minute of extra time. But very much a case of Korea looking very solid under their new coach, Uli Stielike, the former German World Cup defender, who's brought a real level of defensive organisation that they perhaps lacked in Brazil last year.
If Australia do manage to hang on to this two-goal lead and go through to the semi-finals, you've got South Korea there, then the other two quarter-finals are Iraq and Iran, and then Japan against United Arab Emirates, is that right?
Yeah. Yes, that's correct. So Australia would play the winner of Japan and the UAE.
Ooh.
Which if it turns out to be Australia-Japan, would be a repeat of the final 4 years ago. The difference, arguably, is that Japan are perhaps slightly improved and Australia are arguably weaker, or at least certainly a team with less experience and still rebuilding. But if that was to be the two teams lining up in the semi-final, and if Japan did win, there'd be a few regrets amongst the Australian contingent, because that group stage loss against Korea put them on the path against Japan, so it could prove to be a costly moment.
All right, Peter, well, that's excellent. We'll leave you to enjoy the dying minutes of this game and Australia going through, it looks like, to the semi-finals, and hopefully we can catch up with you ahead of those next week.
That'd be great. Thanks, James.
Yeah, all sorts of excitement. As I mentioned, new team is Palestine making their debut at this level. They've lost 4-0 to Japan, 5-1 to Jordan, and 2-0 to Iraq. Qatar as well, for all fans of Qatar and Qatari football, ahead of 2022. They finished with 0 points from three games, but they did actually score two goals in there. And the other thing we should mention as well is Iraq playing Iran in that quarterfinal. Reports, and unconfirmed reports, but there is this story about these teenagers being executed for watching Iraq's win over Jordan earlier in the week in Mosul by ISIS fighters who were in control of the town. But no confirmation. One can only hope and pray that's not a true story, because, just never heard of anything like that.
Carlos Queiroz, of course, is manager of Iran.
Of Iran, okay. And Zico...
The Guardian's own Zico.
Right, he used to be manager of Iraq, but I believe isn't anymore.
Now he's the Guardian's.
Yeah. No, okay, fair enough. Well, that's the Asian Cup, and that is it for today's Football Weekly Extra. Hope you enjoyed it, and we'll be back on Monday to look back on pretty much all the fourth-round action, except for the one or two games that's still to be played. One game, Rochdale-Stoke, that's the Monday night game. And we'll also be looking forward to the other stuff that's about to happen. So, pretty much an unmissable appointment for your listener. Monday afternoon, UK time, we'll be here. In the meantime, though, have yourself a super weekend. And many thanks to producer Ben, to Barry Glenn, Denning, James Horncastle and Greg Burkowski. Bye for now.
Support for this podcast comes from Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes creating a professional website for your business, personal brand or portfolio so easy, it's newsworthy. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.